Cloudy in New York City, 52 degrees, mostly cloudy. From WPFW in Washington and WBAI in New York, I'm Sue Goodwin.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. It's going to be a little different program today. Normally, I would open, as I always do, with the latest on health and healing, and then segue to environmental issues and other issues that impact our lives. But there's something happening in the world today that, in my opinion, is not being addressed. To the contrary, it is being suppressed worldwide. Therefore, it's a worldwide campaign. We know who the people are behind this, the World Economic Forum, the group at Davos, the corporate masters, of which, of all the millions of corporations, there are 10 that control virtually everything because they own stock in companies. And when you own the majority of stock in a company, you control the board of directors. As a result of controlling the board of directors, you control policy. You control marketing, and then everything flows down from there. But try to get to someone who's responsible for making wrong decisions, and that's going down a rabbit hole blindfolded. So today we're going to show you just some examples in just one area, health, public health, and why we have been misled for almost 100 years or more. And I'm going to not give commentary myself. Instead, I'm going to give you third-person input from credible people. We have about 10 to 15 different people you're going to hear on today's program. All of these are credible. You're going to hear from official sources, the government's own sources, and how they've lied or misled. Now, you can say that, well, people make mistakes, and that is true. But can every single journalist in America make the same mistake identically? Repeatedly? No. No, that isn't going to happen ever. So we're going to unfold this for you. I'm going to have an interview a little later on in the program with Dr. Janet Rose. Now, she was on this week for a full hour and the week before for 40 minutes. But she has more to say. And after looking at an email last night from a person in this audience, he is a really strong supporter of WBI's mission. He was the head of the local station board for a period of time and also on the national board. His name's Mitchell Cohen. Mitchell is an author, investigator. He is a citizen journalist and activist and has been for his entire adult life. And when I read his email last night, it motivated me to put together overnight this entire show you're going to hear. He simply sent out an email, a simple, polite request for those who've been pro-vaccine and pro-Fauci and pro-CDC and World Health Organization and pro the booster shots and pro the PCR test and pro the lockdowns. Can you at least acknowledge in part or whole that you are misled, and as a result, even with the best of intentions, you've made an error in judgment? Can you at least acknowledge that error? Or are you going to continue doubling down and hating the people and vilifying and censoring and casting aspersions against those who chose to question any part of this, scientists or lay people alike? And I don't know what the response will be, but I'm going to ask the same question, but to the whole world audience that I have. If you've made mistakes and who you've trusted, can you simply acknowledge that and then right that ship and get correct information? We're going to start today. By the way, I want to start by giving you the archive number because a huge number of people, I mean, last night when Rodney gave me early this morning, the numbers of people that took down last night's show and shared it with other people, it's in the thousands and thousands and thousands. I mean, it's huge. And so if you'd like to download any archive program, call this number, please. 631-359-9463. 631-359-9463. That said, we begin our journey. We're going to play a clip from Anthony Fauci. Listen carefully to what he says. It's only 20 seconds long. And then I'll show you that what he is saying is absolutely correct. And America's, or the world's number one scientific publication, actually did an article on it that shows that he is correct. Let's go to the clip of Anthony Fauci.
But she's had the flu for 14 days. Should she get a flu shot?
Well, no. If she got the flu for 14 days, she's as protected as anybody can be, because the best vaccination is to get infected yourself.
And she should not get it?
If she really has the flu, she definitely doesn't need a flu vaccine. If she really has the flu.
She should not get it again?
No, she doesn't need it, because it's the most potent vaccination is getting infected yourself.
Listen to what he just said. The most potent vaccine or protection is getting infected yourself. Now, the vast majority of Americans have been infected. A huge number of young people were infected, and yet they didn't get sick. They have natural immunity. And as a result, giving them a vaccine on top of having natural immunity has never been challenged, because we know that the whole object of the exercise is get sick, get well, strengthen your immune system, and therefore you're going to be healthier still. So, think of all the people who were told, no, if you have a, if you got sick, you still got to get your mandate, still got to have the two vaccines and then boosters. In Israel, four shots altogether. So what does the latest study show from Israel? The number one group of people going to the hospital, getting sick and dying, are the fully vaccinated. And we're seeing that also in Great Britain. The latest study I just saw at 4 o'clock this morning shows a huge number of people who are vaccinated with boosters going to hospital and dying. And these are the government's own statistics. But then we have to understand that if we allowed people to get the vaccine or increase people who needed it, then only a small percentage of the American population who were vaccinated would have actually been vaccinated. But we wanted everyone vaccinated. We wanted babies vaccinated, children vaccinated, people that the evidence shows will die from the vaccine, but not from the virus. And that's not just in one or two publications. That's a lot of publications. So then what does this say in Nature magazine? Quote, had COVID, you'll probably make antibodies for a lifetime. People who recover from mild COVID have bone marrow cells that can churn out antibodies for decades. All right. That's according to Ewan Calloway, writing in the most respected scientific journal in the world, Nature. So on the one hand, we have science showing us you want natural antibodies and then build your immune system through lifestyle modification from there. Vitamin D, vitamin C, exercise, stress management, healthy plant-based diet, losing weight, etc. That's a reasonable approach. Nowhere in the mainstream media will you see that. Nowhere in any government publication or advice will you see it. It's only don't do anything except take the vaccine. Oh, and a drug that has been shown to kill 25% of the people who take it. Well, that doesn't make any sense. I'm just using that as an example of who do you believe. Fauci was right. And yet the same Fauci turned around and said, everybody has to get vaccinated, no matter what. That should tell you not to trust him. Now, what about the people who were against the anti-vax movement? No matter how legitimate, those who choose not to get vaxxed, a person is sick, has an autoimmune condition, and cannot get vaxxed. It could kill them if you have an autoimmune condition. And that's in the scientific literature, and doctors know that. Didn't matter. Everybody has to get vaccinated. You can't do things then we have medical apartheid. And that's supported by all the people in the mainstream media. Okay. Is anyone willing to acknowledge now that they made a mistake? Mitch Cohen asked people, can you at least acknowledge that you made a mistake? I don't know what the answer will be to Mitch, but here's a doctor who said, yes, I made a mistake. I came down on the wrong side of this issue. And he is, you know, apologizing now. All right. Here's his apology. And I just want you to hear what he has to say. His name is Dr. Joseph Freiman, F-R-A-I-M-A-N, medical doctor, board certified. Here's a short 20, 30-second clip.
I would like to apologize to the three other scientists sitting with me here on Zoom, the proponents of the Barrington Declaration, because I did think y'all were crazy or dumb, or maybe you just didn't understand what I was seeing, but I now realize, actually, I'm sorry, because I believe now you guys were correct, and you were correct from the beginning, and I wish that more people, including myself, had realized that sooner, and I hope more people realize that soon enough.
Okay, good for you, and thank you, Dr. Joseph Freeman, mainstream Orthodox doctor, for at least acknowledging you were wrong. But we have over 900,000 physicians in the United States. We have a lot more nurses. We have pharmacists, all of whom were promoting the vaccine. Did any of you take the time to independently review the scientific literature on the side effects? Did you read the package insert and ask, how can a vaccine be considered safe if there's 45 pages of adverse effects? And then we find out with documents that it's over 1,100 and some different types of adverse events. And now a whole group of studies have been published on endocarditis and infections of the heart muscle, which will kill you. They are not mild. There is no such thing as a mild case of endocarditis. Anyone who tells you that is not aware of what happens to the heart when there is inflammation, scarring. You can die from that later in life. Did anyone take a look at the actual statistics of how many young, very healthy athletes, soccer players, don't get any healthier than a soccer player, or basketball players, football players, have simply dropped dead? Did anyone look at the actual statistics that there is a 46% increase in young people dying above any other year? And the only thing that happened is they got the vaccines. There's nothing else to account for this. Wouldn't that raise the awareness of epidemiologists? Well, the great Barrington was put together by a Harvard professor, a Oxford professor, and a Stanford professor. When they started seeing they're all pro-vaccine, they're all pro-Orthodox, but they started looking at the statistics and said, this makes no sense. This is no way to handle a pandemic. And they were right. Initially, about 50,000 medical doctors and scientists, including multiple Nobel laureates, signed on to the Great Barrington Declaration. Now it's up to around 80,000, and when they allowed other people to sign in, it was 800,000. And yet the Great Barrington Declaration was attacked constantly by everyone else. Well, they were right. And he just, in the video clip, the other three epidemiologists who came forward and all were attacked, they were right. But no one except him, thus far that I'm aware of, has apologized. But it goes deeper. It goes deeper than Fauci saying, you know, hey, you want to get, the infection flu because then you don't need the vaccine. Okay, but we have other people. Now I'm going to go more in depth. Now we're going to go to some clips from some of the leading people in fields. Now, these are heavyweights. The first clip we're going to go to is The Corruption of Psychiatry and Medicine by Big Pharma. Could you imagine what would happen if this gentleman, this board-certified physician who was on the psychiatric panel that determined what is considered a mental illness, Dr. Francis, if he had been heard from day one, probably 90% of all psychiatric pharmaceutical treatments would have been non-treatments. Nobody would have taken them if they knew the dangers. But no one knew the dangers. The media wouldn't tell you the dangers. The reporters wouldn't tell you the dangers. The government officials wouldn't tell you the dangers. He does. Now, mind you, think of all of you who have a depressed moment. We all have moments where our mood goes up and down for whatever legitimate reason. Reaching for their drugs is not the answer, but they want you to believe that only reaching for their drugs is the answer. Out of his mouth, here's what you have to hear.
Problem. The gorilla in the room is the pharmaceutical industry. The drug companies spend something like $80 billion a year on marketing and lobbying. They spend much, much less on research, and most of the research they do is really a tool of marketing, not developing wonderful new products. They have become extremely expert in influencing physicians and the general public to think that there's a pill solution for every problem, that mental disorders are underdiagnosed, easy to diagnose, due to a chemical imbalance, and require a chemical solution. The United States is one of only two countries in the entire world that allow direct-to-consumer advertising. If you watch the Super Bowl or any TV program, you're going to see drug ad after drug ad after drug ad. That doesn't happen anywhere else in the world except the United States. They control the airwaves. They control the internet. They control the print media. The drug companies have thousands of salespeople who are trying to convince doctors to use their medication, and they have very little regulation. The FDA is now a castrated regulator. It's really a fox guarding the hen house. So the pharmaceutical industry rules Washington, rules the airwaves, has tremendous influence over doctors, and has persuaded patients that they need pills they don't really need. It's been pretty well established that about 85% of the medical research literature is just dead wrong. Now, some of this is due to technical factors in how the studies were done. A lot of it is due to the fact that pharma influences the research disproportionately and only reports positive studies while doing its very best to bury negative studies and not to report adverse events. So that doctors are way too much influenced by the pharmaceutical power to control the research, and they're very aggressive and convincing marketing. Added to that, the legion of salespeople who fill their offices and try to convince them that this or that medication that they're pushing is new and wonderful. One of the amazing things is that doctors will prescribe the newest medicine, even though it's not always the best medicine, because it's the most expensive medicine. That the drug companies, through aggressive peddling, through paralyzing Washington, can charge exorbitant prices for drugs that give them the motive and also the means, with all the profits, to shanghai the medical enterprise through aggressive, misinforming propaganda about the value of medicine. At the same time, psychotherapy is just as effective and more enduring than medication for most mild to moderate psychiatric problems, but it has no publicity. Psychotherapists don't have billion-dollar budgets to advertise on TV the values of psychotherapy. It's a David and Goliath struggle where the people who are concerned about medication have very few resources, and the Goliath, the pharmaceutical industry, spends billions and billions of dollars influencing doctors, influencing the public, and influencing the politicians. So this accumulated over the course of the last 20 years results in a tremendous medication overdose of the American public. And it's not just psychiatry. Psychiatry is a very small part of this. That the problem of over-medication, over-treatment in general, pervades all of medicine.
All right, now we go to Dr. Peter Goetze. We're only going to play a small amount of this, but he exposes how Big Pharma, which controls everything in medicine, is really a criminal organization, in his opinion.
My name is Peter Goetze. I'm a director of the Nordic Cochrane Center in Copenhagen and professor of research design and analysis at the University of Copenhagen. 2 years ago, I found out that our prescription drugs are the third leading cause of death after heart disease and cancer. Our drugs kill around 200,000 people in America every year. And half of these people die while they do what their doctors told them. So they die because of the side effects. The other half die because of errors. And it's often the doctors that make the errors, because any drug may come with 20, 30, or 40 warnings, contraindications, precautions, and so on. No doctor in the world knows about all this. So they give patients drugs that they should not have given them, that interact dangerously with other drugs or food items or so on. And then the patients die. That's the other half. So the other thing I found out 2 years ago was that much of what the drug industry does fulfills the criteria for organized crime in U.S. law. And they behave in many ways like the mafia does. They corrupt everyone they can corrupt. They have bought every type of person, even including ministers of health in some countries. So there is a huge amount of corruption. In my country, for example, Denmark, we are regarded as having very little corruption. But yet we have thousands of doctors on industry payroll, although we are just 20,000 doctors. So this is an effective kind of corruption. The drug industry buys the professors first, then chiefs of department, then other chief physicians and so on. They don't buy junior doctors. So when several thousands are on industry payroll, it's really, really bad. And that's why I wrote my book, Deadly Medicines and Organized Crime, How Big Pharma Has Corrupted Healthcare. I hope to convince patients not to take so many drugs, because so many die from the drugs they take. In my country, people take so many drugs that every single citizen can be in treatment with 1.5 drugs from they are born till they die. This is incredible. And drugs are not that helpful. And they kill very many of us. We know that. That's why drugs are the third major killer after heart disease and cancer. So what we need in the coming years is...
Okay, that was Dr. Peter Gochee. Now to show you the people that you've been believing in, that unfortunately and embarrassingly so, the historical liberal democratic groups in our society, the politicians and the institutions, have embraced Big Pharma, embraced the World Health Organization, the CDC, the FDA, Pfizer. They embrace these people. Since when do you allow someone who lied before Congress under oath, the head of CIA and the head of the National Security Agency, to suddenly be the experts giving you advice on CNN and MSNBC? That's how corrupt our media is today. But what about the manufacturers? You believe them. You believe them completely because you're willing to risk your life? Well, here's a clip. Pfizer to pay a record $2.3 billion. This is just one example of a long litany. You can go to GaryNall.com, go down under articles and see the expose I did on the FDA, the CDC, the World Health Organization, Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson, and Merck. Here is a clip.
I'm honored to stand here today with dedicated colleagues from within the Department of Justice as well as beyond it to announce a historic settlement with Pfizer Incorporated, a pharmaceutical manufacturer, and its subsidiary Pharmacia and Upjohn Company, arising out of civil and criminal allegations relating to Pfizer's allegedly illegal promotion of various drugs, most notably Bextra. In a combination civil and criminal settlement, Pfizer has agreed to pay $2.3 billion, the largest healthcare fraud settlement in the history of the Department of Justice. Within that $2.3 billion is a criminal fine of $1.195 billion, which makes it the largest criminal fine in history. When a drug is marketed or promoted.
Okay, the largest criminal fine in history. And that's only one of thousands of settlements, and yet you trust them completely. But doctors who've never done anything wrong, been convicted or charged with anything, Nobel scientists and and professors of medicine and biology, those people you condemn because the media condemns them and Facebook and the other sources censor them. So you trust a criminal organization and you don't. What does that say about you? Just a question. But if you think that's the only thing, oh, no, no. Here's Pfizer bribing foreign governments. Does that sound familiar? Here's the clip.
Corporations are bribing foreign government officials on the heels of news earlier this year that a subsidiary of Walmart was caught bribing government officials in Mexico in violation of the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. Another corporation has been caught doing the same thing. Pharmaceutical giant Pfizer has been charged by the Securities and Exchange Commission with making improper payments to government officials in China, Croatia, Kazakhstan, and a series of other nations in exchange for laxer regulations and quick formulary approvals. Like Walmart, Pfizer...
Okay, so we're giving you money secretly, lots of it. And you then lower all your safety standards. Okay, we just did that with our vaccines. So what happens if the vaccine turns out in time to be a danger to a certain amount of people? Too bad we've made our profit. You got your money. But they were caught. And by the way, you trust the CDC? I wouldn't. I've showed you repeated instances, specific instances, where they've broken the law and hidden. Here's one I didn't know about. I found this at 3:30 this morning. Listen to this one.
A shocking admission today in the document shredding scandal at the Maine Centers for Disease Control.
Five current and one former CDC employee testified under oath in front of a government watchdog panel. WMTW News 8's political reporter Paul Merrill, he was there and joins us now live from Augusta with the story. Paul.
Well, Steve and Tracy, high-level CDC workers, including the agency director, admit that they changed a grant bidding process in order to get different results and then tried to destroy the documentation that showed the original outcomes.
It wasn't the lead. So I said, how did Bangor Public Health get to be the lead? You know, that wasn't what I had seen or what we discussed at the last meeting. And Dr. Pinnett said, oh, that's political.
Former CDC employee Sharon Leahy Lind says agency director Dr. Sheila Pinnett was part of a group that engineered a bidding process to steer part of a $4.7 million grant toward a region of the state.
What they did was they wanted results that they wouldn't have gotten normally, so they rigged the system, then destroyed the information, all the evidence. And under oath, I watched that the woman said, I was told to shred documents, destroy them, to take them home and destroy them. Did anything happen to any of these people? No. Did anything happen to the people who covered up the autism vaccine study that was done back in the early 2000s and that showed that there was a 426% increase in autism spectrum disorder in African-American young 36-year-olds and younger boys? And the answer was no. And that information has still not been brought before Congress for a congressional investigation under oath. That's how powerful the vaccine industry is, the pharmaceutical industry is. The truth doesn't get out. In this case, that's just another example of what happens every day at the CDC. So I have about 27 more clips. I don't have time for those today. And this is only in one area, public health. And these are many of the same institutions that are making one drug that also make a vaccine. So if they lie, if they cheat, if they know a drug like Vioxx, know before it's distributed to people that it can cause an increase in heart attacks and stroke, and no one is held accountable, no one is punished, they just keep making more money. And you trust these people? And on the left, you put an entire nation at risk of trusting people who have a career of criminal behavior? Maybe someone should challenge your intellect, your innate wisdom, or your politics, and how you have warped common sense and reason for the benefit of those in power, but not for the benefit of those who become victims. Now we're going to an interview. This part of the show is not Zoomed because of playing in all these clips and doing an open, what's called a cold open live. But now we're going to go where you can watch the interview between right now Dr. Jessica Rose, who is one of those people who had a blemish-free career, outstanding career, double PhD, a virologist, immunologist, molecular biologist, published in peer-reviewed literature, until she saw that they were lying about the amount of people who died from the vaccines and were injured. Then they went after her and tried to destroy her. Well, she fought back. Here we're going to go to that interview right now, and you can hear and watch her. We'll take a break. We'll take a music break so we can get make sure everything is set, because she's in another country, and she doesn't want people to know where she's at right now, because she's also a target of harassment for simply telling the truth that we were lied to. And if we knew today, if you knew today that 200,000 Americans would die from taking the vaccine and several million would be injured, would you then do that? She's on the line now. We're going to go to the interview, and you can watch it. And you can watch it at PRN.live or ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Nall, and I'd like to say hello to all of the people listening throughout the world. And yes, we are broadcast all over the world. It's amazing how many people in different countries tune in each day or download the program off the archives. And one of the reasons that I've been told is that because we try to look for the truth. I'm non-political. I'm progressive because I want to know what is the truth. I don't care about ideologies. Now, here is an issue that we've invited back, a Dr. Jessica Rose, and you know her background. She was just on 2 days ago on our Progressive Commentary Hour. If you didn't hear it and watch it, go to the Progressive Commentary Hour and download it. But there was a question I did not have a chance to ask her. So we're speaking to her right now, and here's the question. Welcome back. Nice to have you with us again, Jessica. We have a lot of problems trying to understand who should we believe, what should we believe, since the only people we're allowed to believe are those who are considered the establishment, the truth bearers. But then we start looking around at things that we were told were the truth, and we find not so. So would you please take us on a journey, since you're unique in this respect, as a scientist with a background in molecular biology, with a background in immunology, with a deep sense of passion of finding what is real and what is not. For doing this, for the first time in your career, you were vilified. You were gaslighted. You were tried to be erased from the dialogue on COVID. And I know from my own experience with Wikipedia, being on the right side of an issue, the truth of an issue, and yet the establishment is on the wrong side, they're going to go after you. So think of all the scientists who've been on the right side concerning, for example, COVID. Every one of them, no matter what their background, pedigree, all their accomplishments, they've all been erased or tried to be erased. Now the truth is coming out. Now the entire house of cards is collapsing. So please take us on a journey about what you see as some of the corruption within science. The forum is yours.
Thanks again for having me back. Well, corruption in science is alive and well right now, and I am a witness to this firsthand. I have 30 years of experience in academia. I'm not sure if most people listening have experience in academia, but things are typically done in a certain way. And as everybody knows in science, sometimes we have to get uncomfortable and rattle the cage of the norm in order to make scientific progress. This is how it works. You have an hypothesis, you have a theory, you generate proof, you go back and forth, sometimes for decades, with an idea, And then we create a foundation upon which we can agree is the scientific truth. And this is how it goes. This is how it's always gone. There always has to be debate. There always has to be a lack of censorship, because when censorship steps its ugly foot into the science realm, things can go very wrong very quickly. Imagine, just imagine, suspend your beliefs and imagine that nothing truthful in science has been allowed to be put out into the world in the last year. Imagine how that would change the landscape, the papers, the scientists themselves, the news. Just imagine what that would look like. So sometimes it's really hard to believe that things are happening until it happens to you. So the reason I know that this is alive and well at present is because it actually happened to me after 30 years of publishing papers. Papers have to go through something called a peer review process, which is where you write a paper, which is the results of, say, experiments that you've done in your lab. Your peers in your field who know what you're doing in your field will say, yes, no, maybe, no, you need to put in more references. This is not right. This is better. Or they can reject you outright and then you have to start from scratch. But this is the process. It's rigorous. It's terribly annoying. We all hate it. But that's the way it goes, you know. At the end, you have a better product. But if your work doesn't have the chance to see the light of day in the form of a publication, a published peer-reviewed publication, then this becomes a problem if your work is just being, has been classified somehow as not valuable for some reason. And if it's not classified as not valuable because it's truthful or it counters a narrative, for example, then that's very dangerous. So, yes, I have penned a paper on the subject of myocarditis. This is something that everybody's familiar with by now in the context of the COVID-19 injectables. This is inflammation of the myocardium of the heart that has been shown to be happening in young people. So recently I have written and or actually co-authored a paper on myocarditis, which is a serious heart condition which causes inflammation of the myocardium of the heart. This was a non-controversial descriptive analysis of adverse event data. It was peer-reviewed. It was accepted for publication. And then it was censored. 5 days before I was going to give a talk to the FDA on the subject of giving the shots to 5 to 11-year-olds. This paper was very important for just about anybody who can read to have access to. It showed a 19 times above background rate in myocarditis in children aged 12 to 15. And this is confirmed by the CDC's own data. They've had 3 different reports on myocarditis, the MMWR, I think it's called, and they report 100 times above background rates in 12 to 15-year-olds. So it was just a simple confirmation of what we had found in the paper. But and to this day, this is going on 8 months now. To this day, we still have no proper explanation as to why the paper was suddenly temporarily withdrawn. Now, it was immortalized on PubMed. We paid our fees. We signed the contract. This was a done deal. So we have no explanation. We were not given warning that this was going to happen. And it's very, very atypical in our world of serious professional academia. It's that's why I say it's a sign of the times now. I mean, we're seeing corruption in all bodies being exposed, which I think is a mixed blessing. But nonetheless, it's very, very, very important that people understand that This is happening right now, and it's happening to average, normal people just doing what they've always done in science with integrity, with without cowardice, with truth, with exceptionalness, with professionalism. So all of these things are being challenged right now, and it's a shocking way to live, actually.
Next question.
Thank you.
The average person assumes that whatever a government agency says, that they're the ultimate authority. Whatever the top media, like the New York Times, says, it has to be true. And yet repeatedly we have found them intentionally publishing misinformation, where had they published the truth, for example, on FDA-approved off-label medications, over 26 different medications, then a lot of lives would have been spared. A lot of lives would have been saved, as high as 85%. Well, when you're thinking of 800,000 people dead, you're talking about over 600,000 Americans, for example, would be alive today. And worldwide, you're looking at about 6 million people would be alive who would otherwise, you know, would be alive who otherwise died. So there's a consequence to which side of an issue you come down on. And they're being shown to come down on the wrong side, scientifically on the wrong side, consistently. So that can't be by accident.
So the regulatory bodies in this particular case, and I'm talking about in the case of public health policy and healthcare in general, they aren't doing their jobs properly. Their jobs are to protect the public from dangerous substances, either in the form of pharmaceuticals or biologicals, which vaccines are. Pharmaceutical companies are notorious for having a bad track record. We all know that. We've all heard the stories. Smoking is a great one. It's not up to them to make safe products. It is up to the regulatory bodies to ensure that if those products are not safe, that they don't make it to us. So in the case of the mRNA injectable biological products in the context of COVID, there were actually over the previously known limit of deaths in VAERS, reported to VAERS, last January. The last time a vaccine was rolled out into the human population that caused death, the product was pulled from use, from administration, after 53 people died. So we had well over that last January. So if the regulatory bodies were actually functioning properly, then you would think if they were using their own guidelines, the guidelines that they had used historically, that the same rules would have applied to these products. But for some reason, they haven't been. And in addition, me and many of my colleagues are in constant contact with many of the people representing the VAERS data, for example. And we're not getting any answers to our questions. What's the limit? What's the number of people that's acceptable to have an association with death? And what I mean by that is if somebody files a VAERS report, Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System report of death, if a physician files that report, that's a government database. That's a serious thing. It's a federal crime to fake something like that. Then that death is valid, and it has to be taken into account as being associated with the product if it was made in the context of it. That's just logical. Whether or not the product caused that death is up to the WHO, as far as I know, to assess using the Bradford Hill criteria. So all of these things, the assessment of a causality, the number of people who can die before the product is pulled, what is the underreporting factor in the context of these products? All these very important questions that every single human being needs to know the answer to right now are not being answered. It's very, very, very important. If these answers aren't coming simply based on delays, they need to go faster. That would be my answer. If they can expedite the biological products such that they reach 5 billion arms, then they can expedite the answers to our questions. That's what I think. So
based upon your recent research of the VAERS data, you've come up with what you consider a reasonable and plausible actual number of deaths in the United States, even conservatively, minimally, those deaths. Would you compare those death statistics with the 53 people who died from the swine flu vaccine, where all vaccines were banned, all the swine flu vaccines were banned after 53 people died, and yet what is the number that you've come up with that have died from the current vaccines?
So a number of people have attempted to assess the underreporting factor for VAERS. I'm one of them. I use Pfizer's phase 3 clinical trial data in order to calculate an underreporting factor for severe adverse events, which does include death, in VAERS to be 31, which means that you have to multiply anything that qualifies by 31. Now, having said that, I personally think that the underreporting factor for death is going to be a little lower than that, because most likely you're going to have many more reports of death actually entering the VAERS system. So having said that, even if we do not apply an underreporting factor, the number of deaths in VAERS right now, including the foreign data set, is over 28,000. This far exceeds 53 people. This is just the United States. If you multiply that by even a fraction of the underreporting factor that I calculated, like 5 or 6, you still get an exceedingly large number of people who have died in the context of a product that A, they probably didn't need because they had immunity, or B, that they took on good faith because they were told that they needed to protect their community and that this was going to save them, that this was going to free them from lockdowns and mandates and masks. Imagine the horror of a family member who has someone in their family who died. And there are reports in VAERS. These are the notes written by the people who file the reports. And these are general practitioners and nurse practitioners for the most part, writing, I have serious suspicion of causation. And the reason they write that note in there is because there's no code at that point to say this was caused by this. And I know this because it happened 1 hour after the injection, for example. But this is just another element of how the system could improve. The point is, even without the underreporting factor, we far exceeded any historical number of people. It's even morally exceeded the number of people that I don't think one person should die in the context of a product that's designed to help them. I don't think many people would disagree with what I just said. I think it's appalling that so many people have died in association with a product that's meant to help them. I think it's appalling. And I think it's appalling that nobody is investigating this. I think it's appalling that people who are even asking the question, what is the cutoff number for the number of deaths, are being mocked. I think it's appalling that a government database that is a pharmacovigilance tool, which means that it is designed to detect safety signals that were not detected in pre-market testing or clinical trial data, is being called a dumpster. I find that highly, highly offensive, because every single data point is a human being who's reporting an adverse event, which could be as bad as a neurological issue that has them debilitated, for example, which to me would be worse than death because you're still suffering. So
would it be fair to suggest that an approximation of actual deaths in the United States from the different vaccines would be in the neighborhood of somewhere between 100 and 150,000 deaths?
So the actual number of people who've probably died, if you do account for the underreporting factor, is probably closer to 200,000 people at this point. So I want everyone to pause and think about that. I know that most people don't really know 200,000 people. They probably won't meet 200,000 people in their life. It's a hard number of people to imagine, but it is a large number of people. And if you compare that to the number of people who have died in wars, for example, it's recently been pointed out by Edward Dowd that individuals, millennials in the United States, which are young people between the ages of 25 and 44, have suffered enormous numbers of deaths. This happened in the fall of 2021, and no one knows why. He called it a Vietnam War style death count, and because it's equatable. Somebody needs to explain this. A lot of people have reported having died and other severe adverse events in the context of these products. That's not rhetoric. It's not my opinion. It's directly from the people who are providing the reports into a government database. This needs to be addressed. An intelligent answer to the question, how many deaths are there in VAERS right now and what percentage of them were caused by the injections, needs to be answered, and it needs to be answered quickly.
What role does the major media, including the Washington Post, New York Times, CNN, etc., play when they have outstanding reporters, highly educated with phenomenal sources, contacts with the scientific community at every level, and yet not once have they brought up the actual number of deaths and injuries, and of those injuries, how many were permanent? So as you said, the people will continue to suffer possibly for the rest of their life, but they haven't found a single story to highlight. It's a part of the story they just keep saying, they're safe and effective, get your vaccines, and demonize people who ask questions after looking at the data, like yourself.
There's a very big distinction that I've learned over the last 2 years between journalists and people who work in the media. The people who work in the media are reading a script. This, again, I don't think this is my opinion. I think this is a fact. I know people who work in the media, and they do read scripts. If the script says, tell this story, tell the story of the safe and effective COVID vaccines, tell the story of there are no deaths caused by these products, there's no suffering, everything's great, then that's what they're going to do. And they're going to do that under the guise of, this is my job. This is how I feed my family. But I have a problem with that. Journalistic integrity does apply to people who work in the media, in my opinion, even though I do believe that the media people aren't journalists. They're not doing their own research. They're not using their own opinions. They're spouting rhetoric. So this power that the media has is enormous. It's enormous. It's devoured loved ones, family members. It's got its claws in so many people that I know that I can't even have a discussion about this with them. And this is what I do. This is my profession. I'm a published author on the subject of, you know, immunology and viruses, et cetera. I can't even have a conversation with them, because if I bring up something other than what is being spouted by the legacy media, it's nonsense. And it doesn't matter what my credentials are. I'm labeled. This is part of like this weird psyop that's going on. I am labeled, and I'm not what they're calling me. I should know. I'm me. An anti-vaxxer, for example, and I'm vaccinated against things that most people haven't even heard of because I work in the field. And then they turn off. It's like, no, that's not what I heard on the news. You're wrong. And so this power it's very big. The other thing that I'd like to say is a huge shout out to the real journalists out there, to the independent reporters. You are so important right now. This is another reason why I'm doing a lot of podcasts and interviews, because I know how important you are. Your the capillary network between the public who need to know what's going on and the scientists and the researchers and the medical doctors. So I'm eternally grateful for this way to convey my information, which again, I am not paid to give. I'm not incentivized. I simply don't like liars. I don't like things not to be right. It's part of my type A personality. And as par for my own course, I also don't mind being wrong. I don't mind being corrected.
Okay, that is Dr. Jessica Rose, and the entire rest of this will continue on an upcoming program. But those are different voices you've heard today, and I wanted to get this in before BAI signs off for the news to let you know that the entire edifice of the lockdowns, the PCR test, the science supporting 95% efficacy, which is actually 0.1%, and the people who had the knowledge, skills, and scientific background to do their own homework, who could have brought you this but didn't. And yet you still continue to read their papers, listen to them, watch their broadcast. So the issue now is not about all of these propagandists. It's about taking responsibility for stepping up, doing your homework. We'll take on another issue next week. This past week, we took on Ukraine and gave you different perspectives from people who have more honest opinion. They're not warmongers. And also, we're just announcing today the winner of the it's a major award. It's because it's based upon outstanding citizen journalists. The person who doesn't have a background as a professional journalist, but gets involved and starts to send videos, look at videos, read articles, and that make a difference. We get probably 5 to 15 different ones each day from just one person. We get probably 100 all told each day. But over the last year, we reviewed all these, and we have selected to get the International Independent Investigative Reporting Award for Outstanding Citizen Journalist. This year, it's going to Valentina Farisi, F-A-R-A-C-I. She, in fact, three of the clips we used today came from her.
From WPFW in Washington and WBAI in New York, I'm Sue Goodwin. Here are some headlines. The number of Ukrainian refugees fleeing Russia's war in their country has crossed 4.1 million, the United Nations announced today. The tally amounts to just over 9.2% of Ukraine's population, and the UN High Commission for Refugees has labeled the exodus the fastest growing refugee crisis in Europe since World War II. Women and children account for 90% of those who have fled. According to UNICEF, more than 60% of children in Ukraine have been forced from their homes due to the war, with at least 2 million fleeing Ukraine and more than 2.5 million internally displaced. UNICEF Executive Director Catherine Russell said in a statement, quote, "As the number of children fleeing their homes continues to rise, we must remember that each of them needs protection, education, security, and support," close quote. And UNHCR Chief Filippo Grandi, wrapping up his first visit to Ukraine since the invasion, said, quote, "Humanitarian aid alone cannot give them what they really need, and that is peace," close quote. Pope Francis today issued a historic apology for abuses committed by the Catholic Church in Canada's residential school system for Indigenous children. About 150,000 Indigenous children were forced to attend residential schools in Canada between the late 1800s and 1900s, and more than 60% of them were run by the Catholic Church. In a 2015 report, Canada's Truth and Reconciliation Commission described the schools as cultural genocide. The report said children were punished for practicing their traditions and that many suffered psychological, physical, and sexual abuse. It identified thousands of children who died at the schools, including from disease, malnourishment, by suicide, or while trying to escape. The Canadian government issued an official apology for its role in the residential school system in 2006. A federal judge on Thursday ruled that parts of Florida's newly enacted Republican-driven voting law are unconstitutional.